Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 401 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by my main man, Mr. Fast, Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, my man?
I'm doing great, Joe. How you feeling, my man?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. Always good when speaking with you. There's a fact on the podcast that obviously Eddie's voice is the last voice on the intro. So you actually hear Eddie's voice before mine every single week. And then obviously I come in and then I bring Eddie in and then he brings me back in. And then, yeah, I just wanted to point out it's a bit of a pointless fact. But yeah, Eddie's on the intro every week and you hear him before me. Go on, Eddie.
I like that. I'm in there. I mean, I'm in there anyway because I'm on the podcast, but nice to be in the intro. That feels good.
There we go. They don't call him Fast for nothing. He beats me to the microphone. Anyway, let's dive straight into the review part of the show. We're going to start here. Last Friday, the 16th of June at the York Hall, Bethnal Green, London. It was on Sky Sports. Let's start with the undercard. A few fights to run through. Hassan Azim, now 7-0. A TKO for him in the very first round against Ruben Angulo. Now 8-7 with two draws. Angulo down prior to the stoppage. Sam Gilley, friend of the show, Sam Gilley, now 16-1. A knockout in the sixth and final round against Ellis Corry. 7-2 now with a draw. Oh my goodness. He hit him with this left hook, and I think there was about 14 seconds left of the fight. You know, it was in the final round, the sixth round, like I say. Hits him with this left hook, and he screamed. He was on the floor screaming, rolling around. Like, the scream was honestly quite disturbing to hear. Like, it was just an absolute peach of a body shot. And like I say, you know, to get a stoppage over Ellis Corry, I think once again separates Gilley from this level of competition, really. It's kind of hard to... There's a lot of names floating around at the moment, you know. And the domestic scene isn't extremely easy to understand, I think, at that weight. And it's kind of difficult to know where Sam Gilley fits in. But there's a couple wins that he's picked up now which separates him from this level, but I'm not entirely sure what this level is and what that level is either. It's kind of a bit confusing, but I think he's certainly one of the best in the country for sure. And obviously in the post-fight interview, his trainer Rod Julian actually said that I think Sam Gilley is the best in the country and he put him in with anyone right now. That was a real statement, and obviously it's what boxing fans love to hear. And yeah, really, really, really happy for him. Nice guy, Sam Gilley. Moving up the card once again, Isaac Chamberlain with a points win over eight rounds against Dylan Bregian, who's now 13-4 with a draw. Isaac Chamberlain now 15-2. Late opponent change. I think he only had about 2 or 3 days' notice, Dylan Bregian. Once again, though, Isaac Chamberlain with a points win to forget, to be totally honest with you. You know, I still look at his record, Isaac, and I feel like he's such a big underachiever. He's been plagued with bad luck, with injuries and stuff like that, inactivity and the rest of it. And, yeah, you know, he's only lost to two guys, like I say, and both guys have gone on to become world champions. But he is yet to get going. You know, he lost to, obviously, Lawrence Okolie and now Chris Billam-Smith, who has recently beaten Okolie. So his losses are nothing to be ashamed of. And I think he needs to be pushed and just needs to be thrown in now. You know what I mean? He's got the two losses. He doesn't have an O to protect anymore. I think he's certainly one of the best that we've got in the country, obviously, apart from the very, very top of that. Of that level, like your Okolies and your Billam-Smiths and maybe one or two others, but let's throw him right in now. You know, I think there's no need to put him in with guys like this on 2 or 3 days notice, or even the guy that he was supposed to be boxing. I think it was Daniel Bozanski or whatever. He's a journeyman, really. You know, Isaac should be fighting at a much higher level than that. Vidal Riley on the card now, 9-0, a TKO for him in round 4 against former opponent of his own. It was a rematch, an instant rematch with Anis Targe, who's now 7-4. Targe down from a left hook in round 4 and his corner through the towel in. Yeah, hats off to Vidal Riley, I suppose, in some way. I didn't think that it was a smart move taking the rematch with Targe. However, he turned up and seemed to take Targe a hell of a lot more seriously than he did in the first fight. And he just dispatched of him quite easily. It was quite one-sided. And yeah, you know, I want to see him pushed on once again because, you know, he believes in himself. He's a very confident guy. But I think there's too much hype around him right now for his level, in my personal opinion. Moving up the card once again, Aaron McKenna moved to 17-0. It was for the vacant WBC International Middleweight title, a 10-round unanimous decision for him over Uzima Lima. I think it's Uzima or Uzma Lima, I think it may be said. He was 10-0. He's now 10-1. Lima only had about, again, 2 or 3 days notice for the fight, if that. And yeah, Lima, I think from Portugal or something, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe lives in Portugal, put in an absolutely brilliant performance. You know, to think that he had such little notice, he went in with, you know, an undefeated guy that has a lot of hype around him. We're getting quite excited about the McKenna brothers, and Lima went all the way with him, you know, and won a bunch of rounds, and it was a cracking fight. It really was. It was such a good fight. I feel like, you know, York Hall, as I've said so many times, no matter what fights are on a card at York Hall, there's always one that is a barn burner, and this was that barn burner of the night. So yeah, really impressed with McKenna, but yeah, very impressed with Lima. I'd like to see him again, you know, given a better opportunity with more notice. I think he could maybe do something quite big. We'll have to wait and see there. I don't think he's even a middleweight, really. So he did it incredibly well. And I think he's going to go back down to 154. Or maybe, I think, I may have even seen someone say 147 is a weight he could probably make. So, yeah, certainly not a name to just forget about and watch him disappear into the darkness. I want to see him again. And, yeah, I think he just tired towards the end and let a few rounds slip away. But such a tough guy. Looked like he might get knocked out at one point, but no, he kept going. Elsewhere on the card once again, Caroline Dubois now 7-0, a points win over Yanina Del Carmen Lescano, now 13-3. I'm so annoyed. I'm never going to bet on Caroline Dubois again. Like I say, I bet on her to win on points every single time, and then she gets a knockout. The one time I bet on her to get the knockout, she gets a points win. Lescano was down in round 5, but a dominant performance there from Caroline Dubois, who has gone onto social media, onto Twitter after the fight, and pretty much said, "Who do the fans want me to fight?" And they were tagging in a few people that's only had about 5 or 6 fights. And I'm like, whoa, I don't think I want to see that. Like, she would brutalize, you know, someone who's only had 5 or 6 fights. I think she's probably the best fighter of all females in the whole world with just 6 fights. She is definitely going places. Elsewhere on the card, the main event, Fraser Clark now 7-0, a points win over 10 extremely boring rounds against Marius Wack, who's now 37-10. Yeah, a lot of people felt that, you know, Fraser Clark would probably get Wack out of there. Wack is obviously extremely tough, we've known that, but 43 years of age, I think he is now. And again, Fraser Clark, just, you know, started pretty well in the first couple of rounds. Came in at 270 pounds, which I can't say I've been keeping an eye on his weights over the time he's been a pro, but that seems heavy to me on first glimpse. But yeah, just such a lackluster performance, and he started to really tire late on as well. Like I kind of said, I thought we'd get some rounds, and I said that Marius Wack's never been stopped in the first half of a fight, so I felt like it would go late. And yeah, it went late, and it ended up going the distance, which I don't think anyone really, you know, was too confident would happen. But yeah, Fraser Clark, I mean, he banks the rounds, but it wasn't impressive. And a lot of people now are looking at that and saying, now I know why he didn't want to fight Fabio Wardley. I think that's a little bit unfair, but, you know, unfortunately, it's not just about winning fights. It's sometimes about how you win fights. Obviously, it's an entertainment business as well as a sport, and it wasn't entertaining, but he got the win, he got the rounds. Hopefully they can bring him some kind of positives, but it just wasn't exciting. And a lot of people are looking at that saying, wow, he's going to get knocked out by Wardley. I mean, that's how a lot of boxing fans think. And also, I should have mentioned, I almost forgot on the undercard, the brother of Tyson Fury, Roman Fury, now 2-0, a points win over 4 against Eric Nazarian, who's now 29-33 with 4 draws. Tommy Fury, of course, walked him to the ring and was shouting instructions from ringside. Moving now to this one. I don't know if you saw this card, Eddie. If you did, then definitely jump in. It took place at the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, Louisiana. It was live on DAZN. I'm going to start with the undercard. We saw Ramla Ali get knocked out in round 8 of a scheduled 10-rounder. She's now 8-1. She lost by knockout to Julissa Alejandra Guzman, who's now 13-2 with 2 draws. A huge upset, an absolutely huge upset there. Ramla Ali was boxing quite well. I think the first round or two, she actually caught Guzman with some really heavy-looking shots, and I thought to myself, wow. I expected Ramla to win on points, but I thought, wow, this looks like maybe Ramla's trying to make a statement and, you know, dig her heels in and, you know, land something big. And she did land something big, but Guzman took the shots. And I think slowly but surely, Ramla Ali gave up the boxing and went more into trying to, you know, trade with Guzman, which was a terrible, terrible miscalculation. Guzman ends up dropping Ali in round 5, and Ali got saved by the bell. She went back to the corner. She came out in the next round, boxed quite well, and then got caught again in the last part of the round again. She went back to the corner. Manny Robles, I think, was quite well, did quite well in the corner with her. But she just wasn't really listening to him. Then she comes out again and ends up getting absolutely flatlined in round 8. And you don't often see women's knockouts look like that. So that's brilliant stuff for Julissa Guzman. And Ramla Ali is harsh. But I think I'm going to already say I don't see her winning a world title now. She is 30-something years of age. Obviously, she turned pro quite late on. But yeah, I just can't see it. I just can't see it. I think she was always a little bit overrated, and she's been, you know, flatlined like that. That was a knockout that I think is going to be hard to bounce back from. I think she would want the rematch, and yeah, she needs to beat Guzman, because if, you know, Guzman's a decent fighter, but if you can't really beat her, then I don't really think you're going to be a world champion or anything like that. And yeah, it wasn't a close fight. You know, obviously she got knocked out brutally, so it's not like it went the distance. It was a close one. It was a draw. No, she got brutalized. Moving up the card once again, Shakram Giyasov now 14-0, a unanimous decision over 12 rounds against Harold Calderon, now 27-1. A good win for Giyasov. Again, though, a lot of people saying that he looked very beatable. And then in the main event, Regis Ruguru Progre, like I say, if you saw it, Eddie, let me know, but he's now 29-1, a split decision victory over 12 rounds against Danielito Zorrilla, now 17-2. Zorrilla down in round 3. Both guys were hurt in round 1. It was a defense of Progre's WBC World Super Lightweight title. Progre actually was down in one of the rounds, and they said it was a slip, and afterwards he admitted it wasn't a slip. It should have been a knockdown. Credit to him for his honesty there, but yeah, by far the worst performance I've ever seen from Regis Progre. I think the scorecards were awful. I'm not saying that Zorrilla won, but I felt that they were extremely wide. obviously, aside from the split, you know, it was a split decision. So apart from the card that went in Zaria's favor, Progre was completely unable to cut off the ring at all night long. He was falling short with jabs and power shots all night long. And like I say, looked like he got hurt a couple of times, which I'm not used to seeing. And yeah, like I say, he was dropped, should have been a knockdown, referee said a slip. It was just a bizarre performance, and it was a homecoming fight. It was the first defense of him being a two-time world champion. It was his Matchroom debut back in New Orleans. And honestly, it was such a poor performance. I expected him to obliterate this guy. You know, I know Regis Progre. He's a friend of the show. He's a guy I got a hell of a lot of time for. And the way he fights, we've come to love his aggressiveness, the way he goes in. He never wants to leave it in the judge's hands. He likes to go in there and knock people out. And this guy, let's be totally honest, Danielito Zorrilla, his claim to fame was that he lost to a name. And that guy obviously was Arnold Barboza. Arnold Barboza went the distance with him and gave him his only loss. And Regis wanted to do one better than that because he, of course, is a rival with Barboza. So he wanted to knock him out, and he did not come close to it. And yeah, on that performance, I'm telling you now, I think a few fighters would have beaten him if they were in that ring with him on Saturday night. Jack Catterall being top of that list. They're talking about a fight there between Jack Catterall and Regis Progre. They've been talking about it a long time. And when I had Jack Catterall on the podcast a few weeks ago, I said, Jack, you definitely beat Josh Taylor. You should have been given all of the belts in the mail. You should have been given all of those belts. You shouldn't have even had to have another fight to win those belts, right? And if you do have to have another fight, it should be against a paper bag, a wet paper bag. And you should be given the belts nice and easily because that's what you deserve. You're the uncrowned, undisputed champion at 140. But he wanted to fight Regis Progre. And he wanted to fight Regis Progre before Progre even had a WBC title. And I thought it was madness because Progre, on his best night, could probably knock Catterall out and maybe change Catterall's career. And Catterall might never become a champion. And it would be sad to see that happen to Catterall, considering he is an uncrowned, undisputed world champion. But I'm telling you now, based off what I saw from Progre the other night, Jack Catterall would not lose a round over 12 against him. So yeah, I was quite speechless with the performance. Zaria definitely deserves another big fight after that. And yeah, just absolutely bizarre from Progre. I don't know what to say. Speechless. Moving out now though to the final card. It took place at the Gold Coast Convention Centre in Broad Beach, Queensland, Australia. Over here, Sam Goodman, now 15-0. A split decision victory over 12. I didn't see it, but he was able to take the 0 away from Rais Alim, now 20-1. That was over 12 at Super Bantam. And of course, the main event, Tim Tzu, now 23-0, a knockout in the first round against Carlos Ocampo, now 35-3. Tim Tzu ticking all the boxes once again. It was for the WBO Interim World Super Welterweight title. We saw Carlos Ocampo when he first popped up on the scene, getting knocked out in one round by Errol Spence. Then he put together a nice few, you know, bunch of wins. And then got in with the Towering Inferno, Sebastian Fundora. And Sebastian Fundora was knocking everyone out at the time, but couldn't get rid of Carlos Ocampo. They went, I think it was 12 rounds. And I thought, wow, maybe Carlos Ocampo just looked really bad against Errol Spence. Maybe he got caught cold in the first round, and maybe he's a lot better. He does, you know, he does still have that amazing bunch of wins, 35 wins, just two losses. So yeah, he lost on points to Fundora. He must have some ruggedness, some toughness about him. Obviously, being a Mexican fighter, you're born with that stuff anyway. But yeah, he gets in with Tim Tzu. Tim Tzu hurts him early on in the first round and then gets him out there. Just doesn't let him, you know, doesn't let him off the hook. And just, yeah, I mean, ragdolled him a little bit. Got him out in the first round. So that's a mad statement from Tim Tzu there. He's knocked out a fighter in one round that Sebastian Fundora couldn't knock him out in 12 rounds. So for me, wow, that's a big statement. He's done what Errol Spence did. And yeah, he's done it in the same round as Errol Spence. And like I say, Tim Tzu, as I've said so many times, he's got much more than his father's last name. But anyway, that brings part one to a close. The final thing for me to do is to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the undefeated British and EBU European Super Bantamweight Champion. It is, of course, Telford's very own, Mr. Liam Davies. Liam, welcome to the show, my man.
Thank you for having me, mate.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Liam. So it's the first time you've been on the show. So like I say, welcome once again. You're a fighter that I've rated for a long time now. I think it's fair to say that the wider audience really saw the breakout win was definitely the Mark Leach win. A lot of people, obviously, before the fight, had that down as a 50-50. I mean, Leach had beaten, obviously, Ashfaq, Chris Bork, Thomas Asamba, and more. And yeah, he was on a hell of a run. Obviously, you had him down in round one, which I think surprised a lot of people. I know it's some time ago now, Liam, but just walk me through that fight briefly, the night that you, of course, picked up the British.
Yeah, I'd probably say it was like probably a 70-30, wasn't it? A lot of people doubted me. I think not many people but me, my dad and everyone else on my team was believing in me. But yeah, it was no risk, no reward. Like that's the kind of attitude we roll with, and we went in believing we could win. And yeah, like I say, from the first bell it went well. I actually got the cut, didn't I? And it was my first 12-rounder, so it was all new experience to me. And, yeah, I stepped up to the plate and took the title off, like you said, a well-deserving champion.
Yeah, it was a fantastic display. Like I say, I think that was really, you know, your breakout performance. You know, that was the one that, you know, expose you to a wider audience. But yeah, your last fight, let's touch on that, obviously against the Romanian nightmare, Mr. Baluta. Once again, for me, you solidified your status as a top operator. Baluta has caused absolutely everybody, apart from you, nightmares. Obviously, David Oliver Joyce, TJ Doheny, Michael Conlon, Brad Foster, Andrew Kane. I thought you boxed excellently that night. Talk me through that one, Liam.
It was another one where I think some people was unsure if I was ready for that fight. I definitely think Baluta thought I wasn't ready. And like I say, last year was a good year for me. I still don't think it's in the best of me, but I've got the experience behind me now. And like I say, I've fought two different fighters in Leach and Baluta. And it's just experience in the bag and like, it's two good fighters, really, and I think I've done a number on both of them, so I don't think I really get the respect I deserve. I'm not looking for respect anyway, but yeah, I'm sure, like I say, after my fight, Baluta's gone on to beat Kane, and Leach has been avoided like the plague, so I think that says it all, really, and I believe I've done a number on them, and if I'd done it again, I'd do it even better.
No, I believe you. I believe you. I think, you know, the super bantamweight division at the moment is certainly hotting up. And yeah, let's move to your next fight. It's been announced, obviously, July 29th back home in Telford. You'll be boxing former EBU European and British super bantamweight champion Jason Cunningham. Obviously, he wants to try and get his old belts back. How do you see the fight unfolding, Liam?
It's a good fight. He's obviously been around a long time, but look, I just see it as this is my time now, and it's another good name to tick off. And I think this one I'm aiming for my best performance to date. So I believe, like, since last year I've been in the gym working on stuff. I think I'm even nicer with it now. And this one I'm looking to do, show how much I have improved and show that even though there's good competition, I'm number one for a reason, and I believe I will do that.
And I think, you know, Cunningham has had a career full of ups and downs, full of comebacks and setbacks. And that knockout loss to Zelani Tete obviously was a bad one. But for him to come back in a fight with Miguel Gonzalez last time out, I felt it was quite a ballsy move. And obviously he boxed well, you know, he showed us 10 good rounds. Would you say, Liam, that he is the best fighter you'd have boxed as a pro? Or if he isn't, who is?
I'd say Leach is the best southpaw in the country. But we're going to see, aren't we?
We're going to see.
But I've treated it like, listen, I'm the champion, but I've trained like the challenger. And 29th of July, I'm going to show why I'm the champion. That's how I'm rolling with it.
And a fun fact, this is a really interesting fact actually. Cunningham has obviously had 39 career fights. I've only ever been to two of his fights, and they are the only two times that he's been knocked out. I'm not sure what to say about that. I won't be ringside in Telford. They were, I was there when he got knocked out by Tete and when he got knocked out by Bellotti.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like the bad luck charm for Cunningham, but sadly I won't be there in Telford, but you know. I want to get your take, Liam, on a fight that goes down August 18th. Obviously, your former opponent, Baluta, gets in with your rival, Dennis McCann. How do you see that fight going? I cannot wait.
They're all my rivals. They're all my rivals. But yeah, it's a good fight. I think it's going to go one way or the other. Obviously, anyone that fights for Luta, if they got anything between the ears, they're going to do what I've done. Do you know what I mean? Tried to do that, but easier said than done. And like I say, it don't really matter to me. But hopefully McCann wins and keeps this fight alive. Sure, whoever wins is going to want to fight me. They all want to fight me now, don't they?
That's what I'm saying. I know there was a lot of hostility from Andrew Kane, obviously, before he fought Baluta. I think he said he wanted to meet you in the car park. But obviously, Baluta beat him, and that's kind of fizzled it out. So I guess when you're saying you want McCann to win because it'll keep that fight alive, you don't want the same thing to happen.
Yeah, either way, like, I don't really think about it too much. I'm going to win this fight, and I want someone in the top five in the world. I want to real test myself because I've already proved myself. Do you know what I mean? I've been and beat these lads, and now it's like they're fighting them because they got to see how far off they are from me. And that's what I don't blame them, but that's what I want to do with these top guys like Aleem, Steve Desport, Sam Goodman, the American, or fight Sam Goodman myself, or Marlon Tapals is my number one I'd love to fight. And yeah, I'm looking at the guys ahead of me, but like I say, if they keep winning, I'm sure it will happen. But I want every bout by a world title now, and that's what's motivating me to push, and that's what I believe I can do. So hopefully I get the chance to get my shot.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and it very much is within touching distance now. You mentioned the champion Marlon Tapales. Obviously, the other champion is Stephen Fulton. You're ranked with both the WBC and the IBF in the top 15. You touched on Tapales there, and Fulton's got his hands full with Inoue at the moment. But have you had enough time to look at both guys?
Obviously, the Tapales one seems more realistic. And that's the one I've asked George to try and get me, because if they get at me, I believe, leave the rest to me and I'll do a job on him. But, I just want one of the top guys. I want to keep working up and up. I'd like to go Australian, fight Sam Goodman as well. That'd be a good one. Do you know what I mean? I want something big. This is my third back-to-back headline show now in my hometown, and I feel like I deserve something that's big. Do you know what I mean? And a test that I believe that I'll come through.
And talking of big things, the very same night that you box, a few hours later, we're going to see Errol Spence and Terence Crawford. Will you be racing home to watch it, or be too busy celebrating?
Nah. I celebrate with McDonald's, mate. Yeah, I'll be eating some food. Chilling. I'll stay up and watch that fight, definitely. A nice ice cold glass of Coke and a burger. I'm going for Crawford, but my dad reckons Spence, so we've got a bit of a little bet on between us, and yeah, we'll have to watch that together after with the new belt. That's the plan.
I'm a Crawford man as well. Obviously, I was sat right in between you and Dennis at York Hall at that David Adelaide fight the other week. You were both talking right over me, so I could hear everything that was being said. What is it, Liam? because I still don't quite get it. But what is it about you that seems to get under everyone's skin? I know that you seem to really push Andrew Kane's buttons, like, but you don't really seem like, I don't know what it is. Like, how do you do it?
I'm good at the game, and I'm good at the game. I don't know. I don't know what it is. Everyone, they all seem to dislike me, and look, they all want something I've got, which I understand, but it's going to be a hard night's work for anyone to take away what I've worked my whole life for. So I welcome anyone, but like I say, the only one that really makes sense is a big one, is the McCann one, because they think, he gets a lot of big dough, he's well known, and like I say, I just believe that he's not on my level, and if he gets through Baluta and they offer it a big fight, then yeah, but other than that, they need to offer me something, because otherwise I want something offered. So, I mean, this is, all these guys have got all these, especially McCann, all these followers on Instagram and whatever, and I'm the only one doing my third back-to-back headline, selling out a show in my hometown. So these guys can have as many followers as they want. They ain't doing what I'm doing. And sometimes I feel like they get a lot more big duck, but it's one of them. It's gonna come. It's gonna work out for me. I work too hard for it not to work out. So I'm sure whatever's meant to be will be. And it'll be a big fight. Hopefully, we can do it soon. But he's got to get through Baluta first. And this is his first proper test. So, yeah, when I seen him, I wished him luck. And like you said, you heard the conversation. And I said, we'll happily do it if it makes sense. So, not a problem to me.
Yeah. One interesting factor is, obviously, McCann sparred a lot of rounds with Baluta. But what we do know is that McCann's never made 122 and sparred Baluta. I think that's going to be a big factor, actually. I know he's sparred him when he's been a lot heavier. Just before we wrap it up, Liam, we've kind of flown through everything. I just wanted to throw it back over to you, just if you want to sign out with any closing words just to the listeners, if you want to sign out with a final message before we let you go. And of course, don't forget to plug your Instagram and Twitter handles if you're on Twitter.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks to you for having me. Thanks to Telford, my people in my hometown getting behind me. The 29th of July, four belts on the line, headlining in Telford International. Make sure you get tickets before they go. I want to big up my sponsors for supporting me, leading up to this big fight of mine again, showing massive support, and truly grateful. Want a big up fight sponsor for helping me behind the scenes. My team, my dad, my wife, everyone that's part of the team. It's like I say, it's fight number 14, and we keep working up. Add me on Instagram if you want. I'm not really bothered. I think it's Liam Davis 1. And make sure you tune in TNT Sports on the 29th of July. It's going to be done inside the distance.
There we go, done inside the distance. It's always an absolute pleasure to watch you fight, Liam. And it's been an absolute pleasure having you on this week as well. Thank you for your time, my friend. Best of luck July 29th at home in Telford. And we'll speak soon afterwards.
Yeah, thank you again. Speak soon. Cheers.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news part of the show. I'm going to start here with this one. Jaron Boots Ennis has his next fight announced. It's going to be going down on July the 8th. I feel like maybe this is a piece of news that maybe we spoke about before. I'm not entirely sure. It came up again in my inbox. But he gets in with Romain Villa. That's going to be headlining live on Showtime again July the 8th. That's going to be going down in Atlantic City at the Boardwalk. Okay, that's it for that one. In this piece of news here, it's a great fight that's been announced. Dennis McCann gets in with Iron Up Baluta. That one's going to go down at the York Hall August the 18th. Known about that one for a little while. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant fight. I like that fight for Dennis McCann. I think it's a really tough fight, actually. In other news as well, next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend, Natasha Jonas, she will be Getting in with Candy Wyatt. That one will be for the IBF world title at welterweight there. So Natasha Jonas going to, you know, try and become a two-weight world champion there when she moves down in weight. Again, July the 1st on the undercard of Marshall Cruz DeZern, or Cruz DeZern Marshall, I think we should say, as DeZern is the champion. We had her on last week. And then, yeah, on the same date, July the 1st, Jared Anderson was going to be boxing Zan Kasabutsky, but Kasabutsky couldn't travel to the US in time due to visa issues. So in steps former IBF heavyweight world champion Charles Martin to step in there and take on Jared, the real big baby Anderson. I think it's going to be an interesting fight. That's it though for the news. Moving on now to the preview part of the show. We're going to start here at the Ota City General Gymnasium in Tokyo, Japan. Like I say, Eddie, I will be coming to you a lot in part two. But yeah, I'm not going to come to you here. We've got Daigo Higa, 19-2 with a draw. Former, I think he was flyweight world champion. I'm pretty sure he was flyweight, not super fly. But anyway, he was banging everyone out. I remember him being about 14-0 with 14 KOs. And then he lost by knockout to Christopher Rosales. And that pretty much completely changed his career. So he's still hanging around these days with a record of 19-2 with a draw. He gets in with Sirachai Taiyen, who's 65-4. That one going down over 10 rounds there at bantamweight. We're also going to see the rematch between Joshua Franco, 18-1-3. He gets in with Kazuto Ioka, who's 29-2 with a draw. This fight, like I say, is a rematch. Last time they fought to a draw in Japan, and Franco goes back to Japan. He's almost like the king of rematches, Joshua Franco, you know, because he's had so many rematches. He boxed Oscar Negrete 3 times, boxed Andrew Maloney 3 times. Now he gets in with Ioka again, and he usually comes on top. He usually goes away and improves and comes back and wins the second fight. Moving out now to the Memorial Auditorium in Lowell, Massachusetts, USA over here. Friend of the show, Michael Hunter, returns to the ring for the first time in a long, long time. His record, 20-1 with 2 draws. He steps in with Donnie Palmer, who is 12-3 with a draw. Donnie Palmer, the 6'10" heavyweight. I remember being there when Joe Joyce flattened him in a round back in 2018 at York Hall. But yeah, since then he's racked up 3 wins and a loss last time out, unanimously over 10. That was back in January of this year. Michael Hunter hasn't boxed. He's been having a lot of these silly little team combat league fights. I think he's boxed 8 times, but that's only 8 one-round fights. He's been having a lot of those recently. I'm not a massive fan of that, but anyway, he gets back in. It's the first proper fight he's had in a year and a half since last time when he drew with Jerry Forrest in what was a really, really disappointing performance from him. Moving out now to the Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota, USA. This one's going to be going down on Showtime. I'm going to be coming to you here, Eddie. Where to go? Erickson Lubin, 24-2. I know that you have been a big fan of his over the years. I'm not sure where you stand on that at the moment. But anyway, he returns to the ring in what I think is going to be a decent fight, actually. He's coming off that loss last time out to Fundora. That's just over a year ago now, 14 months ago. He gets in with Luis Arias, 20-3 with a draw. Luis Arias, still can't believe he beat Jarrett Hurd, but that one was 2 years ago. Doesn't time fly? Eddie, what do you think about that fight there, Lubin and Arias?
I mean, he's gotten that win over Jarrett Hurd a little while ago, but it's not the same Jarrett Hurd that we remember when he was winning the title or when he was really challenging at a high level and obviously being a champion. So it's hard to – I'm not trying to take anything away from him and, you know, the success he's had recently, you know, with the win, with that fight, that win in particular, but it's just not the same. So, you know, it just, when I look at Lubin, he's such a talent. I really, really like Erickson Lubin's game. Almost every part of it. You know what I mean? Obviously there's some things that he needs to, you know, as far as defense and, you know, obviously not everything's going to be perfect after, obviously he's taken a few losses, to high level competition, but I really like his ability. I like what he brings to the table. It, to me, I think he wins this, but I really think it depends all depends upon what he has left. I mean, in the fights he's lost, they've been tough fights on him. They've been knockout losses. They've been pretty, you know, I don't say ugly, but yeah, kind of ugly in a sense. So, you know, one of them was one round, you know, with you know, when he fought one of the Charlo brothers, but the other one with Fandora was a pretty serious knockdown drag out. So, like I said, I really like him. I like what he brings to the table, but I'm just not sure, you know, where he is at this point. And, you know, with his ability, I expect him to win, but we just really don't know where he's at. You know, with, you know, the recent damage, I'm not saying it's been a whole hell of a lot, but, you know, like that last fight with him with Fedora was pretty brutal. So we'll see what he has. And if he's anything like he was in the past, I expect him to win.
Yeah, and also on the card, Carlos Adames, 22-1, coming off that win last time out. He looked quite good against Juan Macias Montiel, banged him out in three rounds when Jamal Charlo went the distance with him. The win before that, a majority win over Sergei Derevianchenko. So he's in a bit of good form as well. He gets in with another guy who definitely belongs in that conversation, Eddie. Julian J. Rock Williams, 28-3 with a draw. The guy that, of course, took Jarrett Herdzo and also these days looks absolutely shot to pieces. You know, after he beat Jarrett Herd, obviously got knocked out by Banana. Then the shock loss to Vladimir Hernandez, who was only 12-4. And yeah, last time out, he was able to come back with a win. But it's been a really rough ride for him because, you know, he hadn't won since the Jarrett Herd fight, which was just over 4 years ago now. So yeah, he, like I say, beat a guy last time out who was 18-11 with a draw. He gets in with Carlos Adames. They're expecting Carlos Adames to be able to knock J-Rock out. Also on the card, Caleb Truax, friend of the show, former IBF super middleweight world champion, 31-5 with two draws. He returns to the ring at light heavyweight here. He gets in with a guy called Burley Brooks, who's only 6-2 with a draw. He shouldn't really be able to, you know, to trouble Caleb Truax, you wouldn't have thought, even though he's, you know, he doesn't have the best looking record, 6-2 with a draw, but he's got 5 by a KO. Caleb Truax, though, coming off, I think it's 28 or 29 months inactivity, hasn't boxed since he lost to Caleb Plant back in January 2021. So yeah, he's coming off a bit of a lengthy layoff, especially you know, his age. I'm not entirely sure how old Truax is. Anyway, best of luck to him. Moving now to this one. It goes down at the MSG, the Madison Square Garden Theatre in New York, New York, USA. Let's start with the undercard. Reshat Matti, 13-0, gets in with Dakota Linga, who is 13-5 with three draws. I'm sure he's absolutely full of confidence at the moment. Last time out, stopping Josue Vargas in just two rounds. Though prior to that, he hadn't really done too much. He was on a terrible run, you know, getting knocked out by Brandon Lee, losing to Omar Juarez, losing to Maurice Lee. Anyway, I'm sure he'll be full of confidence after knocking out Vargas, though I'm not entirely sure how good Vargas is. And yeah, it's going to be a tough one against Reshat Matti. I wouldn't be surprised if that is quite a good fight, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if that, I was going to say steals the show, but to be honest, there are a couple of decent and intriguing fights, so maybe I wouldn't go that far, but I think it's going to be a good one. Elsewhere on the card as well, I'm going to definitely come to you here, Eddie. Adam Kalnacki, 20-3, of course, coming off his three defeats all in a row. The Robert Hellenius back-to-back knockouts, and then last time losing to Ali Aaron Demarizan over 10 rounds. He gets in with Joe Cusimano, who's 21-4 with 19 KOs. Only been stopped once in his four losses. That was a first-round knockout to Daniel Dubois back in August 21. But yeah, to be honest, you look for his record, Cusimano. You know, don't think he's a great fighter. He's been a pro since 2010, and he's really kind of, you know, only beaten really, you know, low-level competition. No one... I mean, yeah, he beat... His best win of his career was a knockout victory against Gregory Corbin, and that was back in 2020. But Corbin's not fantastic. But yeah, anyway, like I say, gets in with Adam Kalnacki. And the one thing that just bothers me is that he can bang 19 KOs from 21 wins. I tell you what, 9-1 to get the knockout against an awfully, awfully, you know, I don't know what I was going to say there, but, you know, Kalnacki on an awful, awful run. I think that's worth a little punt there. But I don't see it going 10 rounds, Eddie. I don't know if you know much about Joe Cusumano, but Adam Kalnacki in awful form.
Cusumano. Damn, I was actually thinking... Nah, it's not the one I was thinking of. Yeah, I was just about to say, oh, yeah, I know, and then I would have been saying the wrong guy. But, yeah, there was a guy that I was at camp with, and I was helping... a guy by the name of Damian Niaba, a Polish kid, big 6'7" Polish kid. I was up there sparring, and there's another guy that was up there, but his last name wasn't Cusumano. What's his name? Say his name again, Joe.
Joe Cusumano. He's from Virginia.
Wait, Joe is not. I think it might actually be him. You know, it might actually be. I might have to look at his Instagram to be 100% sure. But I, you know what? It might be him. And he was, because I was up in camp with those guys, and he was sparring with one of our favorite guys right now, Big Bang Zhang. And he was actually doing well. If this is the one I'm thinking of, and I think it is, and I think. Is it Joe Cusumano or is it a different name? I think it might have been him. I could be wrong, but it might have been
his
him.
His actual name is Giuseppe Cusumano, but they call him Joe.
There you go. Yeah, that's exactly it. 100%.
6'4".
Okay, so yeah. 6'4". Yeah, yeah. I was up at that camp, and I was the smallest dude up there. That's not nothing new for me. I was the smallest guy in at the Fury camp too. But I was up there with those guys, and the smallest guy was Joe, and he was 6'4". So that lets you know what the hell kind of guys I was in there with. But that was like fresh for me. That was like fresh off of like 4 years in activity. Didn't even pick up a glove, it seemed like. Yeah, he is a banger. He was landing some good shots in there, even with Big Bang, and he was in there. He was giving as good as he was getting in a lot of ways. So he's not a terrible fighter. He's actually not bad. You know what I mean? Obviously, I understand. You know, there's certain situations you're trying to bring a guy along, and sometimes putting him in there with guys that are a little bit too easy can make them become expectant of that kind of performance from their opponents. And then when they see something that they haven't seen before, it kind of obviously shocks them. And that's why, you know, like you get those losses sometimes early, because then one of your guys want to kind of test you. So, and with Kalnacki and honestly, the reason why this fight is being made, in my opinion, is because they are pretty close knit. You know what I'm saying? Cause I was up there with Damian Niaba, who actually works with the brother of Adam Kalnacki. You know what I mean? So, this is why that fight was able to be made. I'm not sure if Joe was in favor of it or not. Probably was. Sell an opportunity for him. The guy's on the slide. So, for him to get some credibility and win a fight with a real top name, or at least a name that was on his way to the top, before he hit that terrible slide. It's a good opportunity for him. So, yeah. Interesting, just from me watching the guy in the gym, he actually did some good things. But I don't know from firsthand, you know, experience, I never sparred with him. But yeah, he's definitely a banger. He can punch. I can tell he can punch. He hit Zhang with a couple shots there and take a little half second pull back. You know what I mean? So yeah, it was good. It was really good work all around. And yeah, I think it's a hell of a bet. You can bet that and get a nice little bet on there. Yeah, that might actually be a good thing for somebody to try out, because he doesn't punch soft, so it gives you a hell of an opportunity to win that money.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm favouring Kaunaki, of course, but I'm just saying I think Kuzumano 9-1 is quite interesting. Kaunaki, like I say, in awful form, hasn't won a fight since August of 2019, so almost 4 years ago when he beat Chris Areola on points over 12 rounds. That's his last win. Moving up to the main event, I think it's another really interesting fight. And once again, Eddie, I want to get your opinion. Edgar Belanga, 20-0. Like I say, I've never seen anything like it, the way he turned pro and was just banging out absolutely everyone in a round. The hype machine came to a very abrupt end, because basically if he can't knock you out in the first round, he can't knock you out in the rest of the rounds, you know, because he was banging everyone out in a round, and then all of a sudden he's gone the distance now four times in a row. He gets in with Jason Quigley, 20-2. Of Jason's two losses, he's been stopped in both of them. A second round stoppage to Demetrius Andre, which doesn't look too great, and then a ninth round retirement against Turiano Johnson back in 2019, that one there. But yeah, gets in with Edgar Belanga. I think it's an intriguing fight, and I do, for some reason, think we're going to see a couple of rounds. I don't think Belanga's going to walk through Quigley, even though Quigley, I think, really and truly is a middleweight, isn't he? I think. Don't think he's been at super middle too long. I think he moved up there in his last fight, really. You know, he lost to Andre, then came back with a comeback win, which was earlier this year to Gabor Gorbix back in April of this year. That one was back home as well in Dublin. I remember that. Wow, time's flown. That only feels like a few weeks ago now to think of it. I guess it really was a few weeks ago. But yeah, he came back, beat him, but he was coming off 2 years and 5 months out. Wow, time has... He was out the ring for almost a year and a half, yeah, after losing to Andrade. Came back with an easy win against a journeyman. Now he's back in with Edgar Belanga. I still think we're going to see a few rounds here for some reason. I like the over-under, which I think set at about 4.5 rounds. But anyway, I'm pretty sure we're both back in Belanga to win. It's for the WBO, NABO super middleweight title. And then the final card to mention goes down at the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. It's not going to be televised, but we are going to see the ring return of former IBF super featherweight world champion, friend of the show, Philadelphia's very own Tevin Farmer. We haven't seen him for 3.5 years since he lost to Joseph Jojo Diaz in Florida. He gets back in with Avery Sparrow, who's 11-4, but a lot better than his record suggests. It's kind of the battle of Philadelphia here. Obviously, Sparrow has kind of had an up and down career. A couple of decent wins along the way, then a couple of bad losses. Coming off a loss last time to William Foster III. But yeah, he's been much more active than Farmer. And I think he's had about 5 fights in the time that Farmer's been out the ring. So yeah, once again, I think it will probably go the distance. It's a 10-rounder, like I say. But I wouldn't be surprised, I swear, if Sparrow pulled off the win on points, just because Tevin's been so inactive. Thoughts, Eddie, if you want to give any thoughts at all, if you know both guys? I know you know Tevin, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I know Tevin. I think I might have seen Avery Sparrow. He wasn't one that fought.
Got banged out by Rolando Romero.
Yes, he did.
But he beat Hank Lundy back in 2019.
Yeah. I know. I seen him. You know, the fact that Tevin's been so inactive can be a little bit of an issue. but it could be a hell of an issue, or it could be a small issue. It all depends on the kind of camp he's had and what he's been doing in the time off. If he's been partying, hanging out, spending money, chilling, not really working, not really being focused, not really thinking about anything. You know, don't get me wrong, sometimes it's nice to get away from everything, especially when, you know, it moves so fast, you know, you get so high so fast. You know, it can sometimes give you a little bit of you know, you just want to kind of recenter yourself. You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. So it's like, you know, it could be a good thing to the time off for him, but you know, when you're inactive, regardless of the situation, no matter what the case may be, you're not going to be as sharp. If you have a great camp, if you're training, if you're doing everything right, you still might not get the best out of yourself, you know, coming back after such a long time off. I have experience with that. I've experienced where I've, where I've been out for a year and a half, and I came back and fought Tomas and had actually a pretty good performance. But, unfortunately, I tore the bicep. But these kind of things happen, and I don't know at that, especially at that weight, things are happening so fast. Guys are moving so fast, and the pace is so high. If you're off a millisecond, can be the difference. So even though, you know, in a normal situation, you would expect him to go and just have no issues with this guy and be able to take him apart, you know, pick him apart. The inactivity can be a problem, especially since the other guy's been pretty active. Now, I think the class is obviously different. You know, we know Sparrow's a little better than his record suggests, but I still think that Tevin is, you know, obviously a much better fighter, much more accomplished, you know, done a lot more things. So, you know, the experience level of the two is a little different, you know, a little different. The caliber of opposition, even though, Sparrow's been in with a couple guys and got a couple decent wins, still not to the level of Tevin. So we'll see on the night whether or not, you know, it's an issue, but I expect Tevin to win. By decision, I don't necessarily expect the knockout, but I definitely expect a decision win from Tevin.
Yeah, I think, like I said, there's a bit of smart money on Sparrow just due to Tevin's inactivity. But yeah, Tevin really should be too classy for Sparrow, and it should be a points win. Obviously, Tevin's not much of a puncher, only got 6 KOs from his 30 wins, and Sparrow's only been stopped the one time, which was to Rolando Romero, round 7. But yeah, that brings the preview part to a close. In part 1, we did the review part, then we welcomed our special guest. In part 2, we did the news, and we've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 401 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the undefeated reigning British and European super bantamweight champion, Mr. Liam Davies. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. Thanks once again for tuning in. Remember, if you do have a spare 2 minutes, please leave us a review on iTunes. That's about everything from myself, though. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe. And we shall see you all again next week.